going, everybody? And thank y'all so very much for joining us here on Expanded Perspectives with me, Cam Hale. And as always, holding it down with me today, it's me, longtime amigo, Cal Filson.
How's it going, everybody? Yes, I'm here in Skeleton Studios. A beautiful spring day here in North Central Texas. Yeah, man, I have been busy moving episodes of Elite from our former platform over to Patreon.
By the handfuls.
It's actually going much smoother and easier than I thought it would. I've been dreading it for a long time. That's why I've been reluctant to move it, right? Because I'd be like, man, what a pain this is going to be. But the Patreon service, it is working pretty good. So it's been a lot easier than I thought it would be. And so thank you for all the new Patreon members. I know a lot of people have switched from our former platform over to Patreon. So I appreciate that. And also we've gotten a couple new people along the way. And I know there's going to be several others still making that transfer over.
And if you like the Owl Man and Bird Man, it's fixing to be out on this week's Elite.
Oh, you're doing another episode.
I'm doing a whole nother episode of all kinds of stories of feathered people.
That's amazing. Yeah. I can't wait to get into those. Yeah, that's what I've been doing. And also, I've been doing my continuing education.
Have you become highly educated yet?
I have not learned anything other than how annoying it is having to do continuing education. And working in the same field for like 27 years, folks.
Right.
Don't really need to. And they've changed the story. So before, in years past, I could skip ahead pretty easily and just take the test and pass them. So you're like, I have to take 28 hours of continuing education. So each course is like 7 hours. So I could skip ahead and I could probably knock one out in an hour. Well, they've changed it now. Now they ask you questions that aren't even related to the topic. It's just like, what was the name of the guy in the third example?
So make sure you watch.
So you have to read each page. Ugh. Because I'm sure some other people were doing the same thing I was. I'm not the first one to think of it.
No.
But it's annoying. Somewhere down the line, we got to figure out how to start an online continuing education school. Because those guys, they just line their pockets. And they make these rules where you have to do it. Yeah. Listen, if you mess up at my job and you need some remedial training, I get it. But if you've had a spotless career for 27 years, why do I need to keep taking courses?
Because they're waiting for your wheels to fall off.
Man. It is annoying. And I'm sure that everybody listening, they have similar things in their field, whatever they do. It's just always something. They can never leave you. It's always figuring a way to get in your pockets.
Right?
Right?
Other than that, you've been staying out of trouble. Working hard. You've been mowing your yard that's growing every few days. So we've been mowing like madmen. I've gotten working on we're both fixing to get new mowers, we think.
Yeah, my last mower kind of crapped out.
We're such dads. Both of us were talking about push mowers. We don't want riding mowers. We want push mowers.
Well, my yard's not big enough. I know I see people riding lawnmowers on yards like that, but like I used to live in the country. Yeah. So like we lived on like 25 acres.
Were you brush hog? There was no lawn mowing. It was brush hog.
A 5,000 square foot lot is not big. I mean, that's like, come on, dude. But my weed eater, I've had that thing for like 15 years. It still runs like a champ.
It's almost old enough to vote.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Speaking of voting, there was a lot of people on the way to Skeleton Studios last week.
Oh, yeah.
Starting their early voting. It was like, holy cow, look at all these people fighting and arguing and waving flags.
Everybody else was like, going crazy.
Come on, y'all. We're all Americans. Relax.
They were fired up.
Relax.
I've been doing a little fishing, Brad.
I heard that. I have not done any fishing this year. But
I went and got my butt kicked by my family. My wife, she was just, she's one of those ones that just will always catch like more fish, the big fish. She just has that gift. And she did it again. She was just hammering fish left and right. She caught two on one bait. Threw out a rattle trap, had two bass on it when it came back in. I'm like, are you serious?
Yeah, when the sand bass are running like that, you can catch multiple ones on the same lure. Oh, it's pretty cool, you know?
Oh, yeah.
I have not. No, I do have a trip coming up in June.
Yeah, y'all head to the coast, right?
Or July. We're heading to Alabama. Oh, so word. I am going to go do some fishing off the coast of Alabama because I've never done that.
Nice.
So I'm looking forward to that.
Nice. Hey, I've got a story here I need to share with you. Now, I've been gathering some up of some strange military stuff. This one jumped out. I want you to listen to this. There was a U.S. Army criminal investigations report from the Iraqi war on something called the ghoul. Staying ghoul. All right. So listen to this. Lon sent this over because he knows, of course, how to get me every time. He's like, look, you need to check this out. Started reading it. This is crazy. This is what it says. I was an investigator with CID from 2004 to 2009 and served in Iraq and Afghanistan. Most of my work was related to various schemes by enlisted personnel like bribery, theft, and money laundering. In 2005, I was informed that I would be embedded with an Army infantry unit in a mountainous region in the somewhere in the Iraqi Kurdistan northeast Iraq area. Now, I could go ahead and sound this out for y'all.
Please.
But this, I'm going to give it a whirl. You ready?
Yeah.
It starts off with Sule. I can tell it's Sulaymaniyah. Sulaymaniyah Governorate. Sulaymaniyah Governorate is this
region.
That's
the name of the town?
That's the name of the region. It's probably truly not the name of the region. It's just how I pronounced it. So now it's the name of my region. So that's what I'm saying here. And it goes on to say that once I reached my assigned location, we were briefed on strange activity that had occurred in a particular area just a few miles from the Iranian border. We started the investigation by reading reports that came from a few local villagers and Kurdish military, who stated that people were being hunted in the mountains by an unknown creature. One man told me that the locals called it a ghoul. Kyle, you're not very ghoul. He had never seen it, but it was described as a tall, man-like creature with long arms and legs who fed on human flesh. I reported the information I gathered to my superiors after returning to the unit's HQ. A few days later, I was ordered to return to the area of the strange activity and investigate further. Sounds like they wanted to get this fella killed. An infantry squad with squad leader was assigned to accompany me. The general consensus was that it was likely a soldier who had left his post or went AWOL and went crazy and started causing problems. Armed conflict can induce the worst in people to surface. If this was the case and the individual was killing non-combatants, our job would be formidable. A few days of surveillance and searching, we still had no clue of what we were dealing with. If this was indeed a soldier or other civilian man, we would have seen him or gathered some evidence. I was starting to believe that this was a wild goose chase, but the villagers were insistent that there was something hunting them. So one evening, the squad leader and I were going over a report when we were alarmed by a god-awful scream that came from the direction of a mountain pass that we had just searched a few hours before. A few local people who had been outside quickly made their way home. It was obvious that they had heard this scream before. Within the hour, the squad and I were slowly entering the pass. It was night, but the moon was very bright, so we were able to see around a bit. We searched the entire area for several hours using night vision and high-intensity lights, and we found nothing. Not a footprint or a remnant of any creature fitting this description. I've always wondered what we had heard that night. I've asked a few and learned from people that their opinion, but there's little satisfaction in it. There were many strange instances in Iraq that just never made the light of day. I've heard some, but I'm positive most were just filed away.
Wow.
So they went and researched with everything they had, still hearing the screams. Now, how would that be with thermal? You go, you hear these crazy noises. You're there within minutes. You get your gear up and there's nothing.
I would like to pretend that it was a snow leopard or something like that, and it was hiding in a cave. That's why my thermals didn't pick it up. Because war is already frightening enough, and now you got to worry about flesh-eating ghouls out there?
Yeah, right?
No, thank you.
I'm out.
I definitely would go fully armed. Like, I need my M60. I need five or six belts with me. I need my M79 grenade launcher.
I need to carry my saw around, and I want, like, some plastic explosives.
Yeah.
Yeah, set to my my heart monitor, so in case it peaks, it blows up and gets them. I don't want them. I'm terrified.
I'm not interested in fighting ghouls.
No.
That would be terrifying. But that's a good point, too. Maybe it was like some guy who just lost his mind.
That is true.
Because that's one of the things they mentioned is it could be a person who just his mind broke because of the travesties of war.
Yeah.
He just couldn't handle it.
And might have been.
Just out there rogue, just killing people. But I don't know. How did they know that it was eating flesh?
Maybe that's what turns them into ghouls.
Well.
Right? Is after a while, they just, and then finally he just fully converted to ghoul form.
Yeah, maybe. Check this out. This is pretty interesting. It says, when cell phones first started to get popular, my mom bought me, my sister, and herself all new cell phones on one condition, that if she called, no matter what, we always would answer. No excuses every time.
That sounds like somebody else I know sitting here.
So one night I was walking up my long country driveway after we had a big snowstorm. I had a two-wheel drive car and couldn't make it up the hill, so I would often park at the bottom of the road and then walk up. I started walking, and my cell phone went off. It was a text from my mom, but there was no message, just a blank screen. As I was holding it, the phone went off again, and again, and again, one after another, about 10 times in total. All were text messages from my mom, but with no message, just a blank screen. So I started to think, you know, what the hell's going on? Then my phone began to ring, right when I was at the door, and it was my mom. I said, hello, and the first thing she said was, I've been texting you, why haven't you responded? Where are you? What are you doing? And I said, Mom, I'm literally walking in the door right now, which I was. Now, most nights, my mom slips on the couch because my dad is kind of a crazy dreamer, and sometimes he would kick and punch my mom in his sleep. The couch was perfectly visible from the front door when you walked inside of my house. Anyways, all of the lights were off in my house as I walked in. I was just telling my mom, I'm walking in the door right now, and she said she really needed to talk to me whenever I got inside, to come talk to her. So I was kicking off my shoes at that point, and I couldn't really see anything. I said, okay. And my mom said, I love you. And I said, I love you too. The moment I was flipping the light switch to the walk-in light inside my house where everyone takes off their shoes, I was literally looking at my mom, who was fast asleep, snoring on the couch. As I was saying, I love you too. Then I was looking at my mom sleeping, as I heard the phone click from the caller on the other end, hanging up. It couldn't have been my mom. I was so confused and scared and just in shock. My brain could not compute what had just happened. As I was standing there shaking and trying to grasp what happened, I could hear my mom moaning in her sleep. She was obviously having a bad dream, a nightmare. I turned on the living room light and I shook my mother awake. She flew up into a sitting position in panic, tears in her eyes. She was in full mom panic mode. She said she was having the worst dream, that I had been killed in a car crash. She explained how she was desperately trying to call and text me in her dream, but she couldn't dial the numbers right. No matter how hard she tried to open up a line of communication with me, she couldn't get her cell phone to work right. Which, I've had the same kind of nightmare myself. Utter frustration and panic. As she told me about her dream, I must have turned white from pure shock and confusion. She noticed this and asked me, "What's wrong with you?" I told her what had just happened, how she had texted me a bunch of times, but with only blank messages, back to back, like 10 times. I also told her about the phone call. I told her exactly what happened. We were both dumbfounded, is the only way I can put it. Just pure confusion and excitement at the same time. There are no words to describe the way I felt that night. We decided to look at our call history on our phones, but there was none. It was like it never happened, but it did happen. As sure as the sky is blue, I know it happened. My mom knew I was telling the truth too. When the phone bill arrived that month, there was no record of what happened in the statement either. Super strange is all I can say. Super weird. I will never forget what happened that night. It has changed me forever. I don't discount crazy stories people tell, because I know crazy stuff that seems impossible. Well, I'm telling you, it's possible. I know, because it happened to me. Thanks for everything you two do. I hope you enjoyed my story. Stay creepy. Your friend, Allison. So she was receiving phone calls and texts that her mother was dreaming about doing.
That's crazy.
But it was manifesting in physical form.
That, or the mother was taking Ambien.
That is a possibility.
Just texting, just randomly. It was
I remember when I was in the hospital in 2020, the first two nights I was there, they gave me Ambien. My wife said I was just talking craziness.
I've heard the stories about
I thought Luke was a fighter pilot, and how come he wasn't getting into Top Gun, and like just wild stuff. I don't remember any of it.
She told me when we stopped by to see you, she had told me before we went in there, she was like, the story. She kept saying, I wished I could have filmed him. If I wouldn't have been so afraid, like she was so worried for you. But she said if she wouldn't have been, she would have loved to have got the stories of you just telling crazy Ambien stories.
Yeah. I have no
I wish we had it recorded so I could play it on the show.
Me too. I had no recollection of it. And after the first two nights, the nurses stopped giving it to me and gave me something else. But I've heard these horror stories of people like emailing some horrific email to their boss. And then they come into work on Monday and they're like, what? And the boss is like, yeah, you told me to go, you know, take off. And they're like, yeah, I don't remember that. He's like, look, I'll show you. I've heard of people cooking entire meals while they're on it. It's a crazy drug.
Man, I don't want no
part of
that.
It doesn't affect everybody, though, that way.
No.
Some people are fine. They take it all the time. I take some Lumi Labs is all I need.
Right? That's all I need. Speaking of all you need. All you need. This is going to be a little bit freaky. This took place in near Fort McCoy by a Wisconsin National Guardsman.
Why don't you tell this when we get back from the break?
Oh, okay. I can do that.
Or in the outro of the show. I'm about to, because I want to get into some of these cool stories.
All right.
I'm going to be talking about something. I don't know if you're familiar with this. It's called GPT. Geographic psychic trauma. Are you familiar with this stuff?
No.
It's pretty interesting.
I don't have any trauma.
It's pretty interesting. It's it talks about like on, say, imagine like a highway where like a horrific accident happens.
Okay.
And someone passes away. It's like it's imprinted in that area. And then forever, there's like sightings and stuff that happen in and around where that wreck happened. And it's geographic psychic trauma. So pretty interesting. I'm going to get into that when we get back from the break. Stick with us, folks. You're listening to Expanded Perspectives. The best way to learn a new language is immersion. Living with the language that is spoken and using it every day. But if that's not something you can do, you can still learn a language the second best way. And that's with Babbel. Cam, did you know that 1 in 5 Americans aspire to learn a new language? And if you're one of them, make 2024 the year you turn that dream into a reality. Elevate yourself in 2024 with Babbel, the scientifically proven language learning app that delivers results. Crafted by genuine language enthusiasts for authentic conversations, Babbel is your shortcut to speaking a new language in just 3 weeks, thanks to quick 10-minute lessons devised by a team of over 150 language experts. Forget the hefty fees of private tutors or the frustration of ineffective language apps. Babbel's conversation-based approach integrates scientifically backed cognitive tools like spaced repetition and interactive lessons. Real language teachers and native speakers lend their voices to create an immersive experience. Now, the first thing you're going to do is you're going to select the language that you want to learn. Then the website is going to ask you a few questions. So in my case, I chose Spanish. I'm from Texas, so English and Spanish are the most common languages spoken here. Now, I knew some Spanish already because I took Spanish 1 and 2 back in high school, but it's been a hot minute since I've been in Spanish class. So the app will start to ask you questions like, why are you wanting to learn Spanish? You know, they're trying to get a feel of what you're doing. Do you know any Spanish? What are you looking to achieve? You just want to learn the basics? Do you want to just get conversational? Or do you want to speak with ease in any situation? How much time do you want to commit to learning Spanish? 5 minutes a day? 15 minutes a day? Or maybe more? Or maybe you're not even sure. What is your best learning style? Do you like to do it solo? Do you like to do it socially? Or maybe you're unsure. How old are you? Babbel has courses for all ages. And that's it. You do what you want to learn on your at your own pace. You can take online classes with real teachers, or you can do it on your own, all solo. It doesn't matter. Since starting courses with Babbel, it's improved my real-life conversational skills. I've tried it because we've been to restaurants a few times and I've ordered in Spanish. I've been on job sites. I've used some of the Spanish there. And I have a couple friends that are Spanish-speaking too. So they've, you know, I've tried it out and it really does work. I'm surprised how much easier it is to use. I wish I would have had something like this back in high school. Kim, you've tried it. What did you think?
I enjoy it. Here's the main thing I enjoy about it. If you get real serious about it and you want to learn another language, the hardest thing for me lots of times is context, right? The context of how it is used and when it is used, because it's not always the same as when it is with our language.
Right.
That's what's really cool to me about the whole thing with Babbel is not only are they helping you with the language skills, but you also learn traditions and context and how it can apply to the culture of the languages that you're trying to learn and the way it's grounded. So that really, to me, helps out tremendously to kind of give you a lock on what you're actually going to need. Folks, like Kyle said, you're going to enjoy it. You want to learn it and you've been putting it off for so long. You want to learn a new language. This is the way to do it. And here is a special limited time offer right now for all of y'all listening. Right now, you can get 55% off your Babbel subscription. But it's only for our listeners. So this is what you do. You're going to go to Babbel.com/expanded. No, nothing crazy, no frills, just Babbel.com/expanded. There you're going to get 55% off, y'all. You can't not try it. Go to Babbel.com/expanded. I'm going to spell it out with you for Babbel. It's three B's, y'all. B-A-B-B-E-L. That's right. Babbel.com/expanded.
Rules and restrictions may apply. And we're back with Expanded Perspectives. Yeah, I wanted to talk about something a little bit different today than what I normally do or what we normally do. We don't really talk about ghosts that often on the show, and I don't even know why. Like, we're not against it. We just don't seem to cover that very often. I want to talk to you today about a thing called geographic psychic trauma. Now, geographic psychic trauma is when a travesty happens, like a car accident or something happens and life is lost, and that area, for whatever reason, is like imprinted on. And this is where people have these continuing sightings of ghosts at that marker, that particular spot on the road, or that particular bend in the road, or that particular bridge, or home, or I guess ship, or U-boat, whatever it is, something happened there. And it's created this zone, this area, geographic psychic trauma. It's imprinted for whatever reason. You know, one of my questions I used to always have as a young person, and I still do today, is why do some ghosts stay where they died, but others appear where they're buried? And I've never really found a good explanation. Let's get into the types of hauntings to start out. Now, there are six commonly accepted types. Now, the first type is residual haunting phenomenon, which is what I've been talking about, geographic psychic trauma, or GPT. Now, residual haunting activity manifests in the aftermath of traumatic events, such as murders or assaults, or even car wrecks. The negative energy emitted during these occurrences permeates the environment, imprinting the atmosphere like an indelible recording. Subsequently, the events replay repeatedly, and nobody knows why, akin to something like a looped tape. Now, notably, entities involved in residual hauntings remain unaware of their surroundings, lacking any consciousness for interaction. Now, this form of haunting can also stem from positive energy, resulting in eerie phenomenon like phantom parties, where sounds of revelry echo through empty rooms. Now, remarkably, residual hauntings can even involve specters of living individuals, adding layers of complexity to the phenomenon. Now, the next type is poltergeist activity. Now, the term poltergeist is derived from the German word that translates to noisy spirits. Now, throughout history, reports of poltergeist activity have persisted, characterized by escalating disturbances such as inexplicable knocks, furniture moving around autonomously, and the eventual manifestation of voices and apparitions. Often linked with adolescent females for some reason, these hauntings sometimes stem from individuals inadvertently manipulating surrounding energies. The unpredictable nature of poltergeist encounters makes them challenging to categorize, with each case exhibiting unique characteristics. Now, typically, one person with the affected environment experiences the brunt of the activity, which often subsides in their absence. Addressing the underlying emotional turmoil of stress of the individual involved can lead to resolution, albeit with varying timelines. The next category is demonic activity. Now, demonic entities, believed to originate from extraterrestrial realms, they embody pure energy, devoid of mortal form. Their manifestations range from angelic to grotesquely terrifying, often accompanied by a pervasive black mist or fog. Unlike human spirits, demons possess an amazing amount of strength, and they seem to be ill-tempered, with the ultimate goal of subjugating individuals for possession. Now, their presence is marked by usually a foul stench, sometimes physical assaults, and atmospheric disturbances, reflecting their deep-seated animosity towards humanity. Now, while religious interventions may compel them to depart temporarily, demons remain resilient, capable of morphing forms and traversing vast distances effortlessly. The next is intelligent or interactive hauntings. In line with Einstein's theories on energy, intelligent haunting phenomenon suggests that the departed souls retain their former intelligence and interact with the living. These encounters, characterized by conscious awareness and communication, often stem from unresolved trauma, emotional bonds, or fears of judgment. The departed may linger around due to unfinished business or a reluctance to depart from loved ones, creating a profound and interactive presence. Another type is shadow entities. Now, shadow entities, distinct from conventional ghosts, manifest as shapeless dark masses or humanoid figures devoid of discernible features. Typically encountered peripherally, these entities evoke feelings of dread and are often associated with non-human origins. Now, we've covered shadow people dozens of times on this show. It's one of my favorite topics. It is creepy. Now, descriptions range from child-sized humanoids to hat-wearing or hooded figures. For whatever reason, the hat man is seen, and it's always a question, why the hat? Oftentimes, movements resembling a disconcerting dance are seen. The enigmatic nature of shadow entities defies conventional explanation, contributing to their mystique and unnerving presence. The last type, portal hauntings. Although speculative, the existence of portals or doorways facilitating the transit of entities between dimensions. These purported portals, not confined to specific locations, are associated with anomalous phenomenon like glowing orbs, strange creatures, and unexplained mists. While the concept remains controversial, areas experiencing diverse paranormal activities are theorized to host these gateways, facilitating interdimensional travel. But I want to talk specifically about GPT on this show today. I think it's an interesting topic, and I want to dig in more. Now, geographic psychic trauma, or GPT, is the energy imprint on an object or an area as the result of a tragic or traumatic event. It is believed to occur when the soul, or your spirit, leaves the body so quickly that the consciousness attached to it, if any, is confused and cannot comprehend what has happened, or even where they are. GPT hauntings are different from residual hauntings in this instance because they are able to interact with the living and have a sense of consciousness, whereas residual energy haunts are not aware of the living or their apparent surroundings. That's why it keeps replaying and replaying. Phantom hitchhikers can be residual in nature if they do not interact or acknowledge the presence of the living. Those that seem to randomly appear
and disappear within vehicles, or seem unaware of communication attempts, are most likely residual hauntings. Spirit hitchhikers that interact with the living, asking for a ride or asking for help, those are the result of GPT incidents. So how does GPT even happen? Imagine you're driving or riding in a car. You should, and most likely do, have your seatbelt on. If you were to get into an accident, the seatbelt was designed to and should hold you securely inside the vehicle. Occasionally, whether due to operational error, design flaw, or deterioration, the seatbelt fails, and people suffer great injuries. Now imagine your body is the seatbelt, holding your consciousness or your soul or spirit securely inside. Sometimes a death is so violent or sudden that the conscious energy is immediately and forcefully thrust from within the body and imprinted on the surrounding area, potentially resulting in a haunting. Vehicle accidents aren't the only causes of GPT. Any traumatic, most likely violent death, where the conscious individual isn't aware of what's happening, can result in GPT. This is why residual hauntings are frequently reported at murder and mass casualty scenes. Not all traumatic events, though, result in geographic psychic trauma or residual hauntings, and not all hauntings are the result of geographic psychic trauma events. It's clear to understand the differences. Now, in the music industry, it, for some reason, has taken particular interest in phantom hitchhikers. Songs like Bringing Mary Home in 1966, or Phantom 309 in 1967, and The Ride in 1983, thrilled and chilled listeners as the crooner sings about innocently walking or driving down a road when they're approached by someone who gives them an experience of a lifetime. When the main character in this story or slash song confides in another person about their experience, a waitress, a truck driver, or a resident of the home they're visiting, the other person reveals that the mysterious person in question was, in fact, a ghost, and the circumstances of their passing. Interestingly enough, the song Phantom 309 is based on an actual event. I don't know if you knew that or not. No, the song isn't about a phantom hitchhiker or a ghostly truck, but about an accident that took place in Saugus, Massachusetts, just north of Boston on Route 1. On January 29, 1963, John William Pete Trudell filled his tanker with 4,600 gallons of gasoline at the Chelsea River Bulk Petroleum Facility. He was headed for Keene, New Hampshire, on the eastern bank of the Connecticut River, just across from Vermont. At the intersection of Route 129 and Route 1 in Saugus, there is a bridge where a blind spot impeded drivers as they dipped down under it. Pete had no idea that a car had stopped under the bridge, waiting for a school bus to pick up children. Given his rate of speed and the suddenness of the discovery, there was no way Pete could stop his truck in time. A split-second decision instantly turned Pete Trudell into a hero, but ended his life. Instead of hitting the stopped vehicle and school bus, he crashed his tanker into the bridge embankment. Pete was trapped inside the cab as the 4,600 gallons of gas he had been hauling burst into flames. Robert Mayer, the driver of the stopped car, also was overtaken by the flames. The bus was engulfed in fire, but all six children, plus the driver, had mere seconds to escape before the bus burst into flames. The heat from the fire was so intense that the steel girders on the overpass buckled. The bridge, blind spot, and hazardous dip in the road have since been reconstructed, making the area safe now to travel. The town of Saugus has erected a memorial to Pete and his selfless act that ultimately inspired a country song that peaked at number 9 on the Billboard Country Hits. In Phantom 309, the narrator reveals to a truck stop waitress generosity he received after hitching a ride in the rain and receiving a dime for a cup of coffee from the driver, whose name was Big Joe. The waitress tells him that 10 years earlier, At the very same intersection where he was picked up, Big Joe swerved to avoid hitting a school bus full of children. He lost control of the truck and was killed in the wreck. In the song Bringing Mary Home, closely resembles one of the most popular phantom hitchhiker stories known to lore. The narrator, usually a man, is driving down the road when he sees a young girl, sometimes in tattered clothing, sometimes in a dancing dress, needing a ride home. The kind narrator offers her a lift when he gets to the address given, and the girl is gone. Now, while the song does not depict this aspect, in the lore, there is sometimes a sweater, or in modern versions, a cell phone, which the narrator brings to the front door of the house, only to be told that the owner of the object had passed away on that very day any number of years ago. There is no known documented incident that spawned this legend, and there is a version in nearly every U.S. state. The closest lore with any substance is that of Resurrection Mary in Justice, Illinois. However, Mary vanishes as they drive past the Resurrection Cemetery, where she is believed to be buried. Sounds awful lot like a listener story, right? In the song The Ride, it's about a stereotypical broke, lonely country music artist hitchhiking from Montgomery, Alabama to Nashville, Tennessee, when he's picked up by a half-drunk, hollow-eyed man dressed like 1950 in a Cadillac. There's plenty of interaction between the narrator and the driver of the car, to include even bumming a smoke. The driver gives the narrator advice about his career, telling him how he needs to make people feel with his music and the other things he needs to do if he's going to make it in the business. Just outside of the Nashville destination, the driver stops the vehicle and declares that, "This is where you get off, boy, because I'm going back to Alabama." When the narrator goes to thank the driver, he refers to him as Mr. And it's at that point where the driver reveals that his name is Hank, alluding that he may be the ghost of Hank Williams Sr., who passed away suspiciously in 1952 of a heart attack. Now, Gary Gentry, who wrote The Ride in 1982, told Bart Herbison of the Nashville Songwriters Association International that he was inspired to write The Ride after lighting candles and calling out to Williams while inebriated. He said, "I said, Hank, why were you so big? Just because you died young? Show yourself. Help me write this song." I looked down that long hallway, and Hank was sitting there without a shirt on my couch in my living room. And I said, "Hank, we're going to take a ride. I want to write about you. I think you're the greatest songwriter and entertainer that ever lived." Now, whether the ghost of Hank Williams actually took a ride with Gary Gentry that night, well, that's unclear. But it did spawn a hit for David Allan Coe in 1983, where it spent 19 weeks on the Billboard charts, peaking at number 4 in the U.S. and number 2 in Canada. Let's get into some other sightings of GPT. Let's kind of pick a couple states here, starting in California. Now, on Highway 74, also known as Ortega Highway in San Juan Capistrano, there seems to be an interesting case. Now, the majority of the paranormal activity on this road seems to center around the area nearest Aquest Diagnostics, located at 33608 Ortega Highway. This laboratory isn't an experimental lab, as you might expect, based on the activity that happens in the area, but rather a diagnostic location where samples are analyzed to detect and diagnose illnesses. It's no more malevolent than what you'd find in a high school science classroom. But the paranormal activity along this section of road is what fuels the creative minds of horror movie writers. The first and probably most common report is that of flickering lights. More paranormal researchers agree that electrical disturbances, i.e. flickering lights, are a good indicator that something is about to happen, especially in the paranormal. What frequently accompanies them is what chills nearly every witness to their very core. Standing directly under the once flickering lights is a clown. Now, this clown is always reported to be male, and he looks very menacing. He's always next to the road and never on Quest Diagnostics property. Further, he vanishes before the approaching or any approaching vehicle can actually pass him. The few brave souls who attempt to make contact on foot report that he looks like a mirage and that he slowly vanishes the closer you get. He is always reported to stand perfectly still and moves without walking when he disappears. So that's right, folks. If you want to see a Pennywise-like clown, get out there to Highway 74 in California. See if you can see him yourself. Now, I personally would not want to see the spirit of a menacing-looking clown. But the address, again, is 33608 Ortega Highway. You can get on Google Earth. You can look it up. You can plan a trip if that's something you want to do. Make sure you take some cameras with you and send me the videos. Now, in his book, Real Haunted Roads and Highways, by Zachary Knowles, he states, while it seems to have never harmed anyone through its appearance, either directly or indirectly, he still causes inexplicable horror to those who catch sight of him, even those who normally aren't bothered by clowns. Psychics investigating the area have indicated that he's a very evil entity that, given the opportunity, would cause death, but something seems to hold him back. In addition to the clown, a skeletal spirit is reported to watch passing vehicles from atop a streetlight, and mysterious light phenomenon have been reported to dance randomly above the brush and grasses in the area. The road itself is rather dangerous, with tight curves that could lead to dangerous accidents. If you're not paying close attention, should you decide to explore this area, looking for the clown or any other mysterious goings-on, make sure you have at least one person with you so that you can drive and focus on the road. Now, while the others scout for the entities, you might want to say a prayer. Also, do not trespass on Quest Diagnostics or other private properties. What about Colorado? There's a place called Pikes Peak Highway near Colorado Springs, and this is a place for geographic psychic trauma, or some people call it a crisis apparition. Now, paranormal researchers categorize crisis apparitions as the spirit of a person who passed during a time of crisis, such as a murder or other traumatic event. Desperation Mona is one such apparition. In 1932, Winona Mona Roberts and her new husband were driving on Pikes Peak Highway when their vehicle went off the road at mile marker 13. They fell approximately 150 feet down the side of the mountain and miraculously survived. It wasn't until 3 weeks after getting out of the hospital that Mona died in nearby Manitou Springs. Because she didn't pass at the location of the accident, does this make her a genuine crisis apparition? I don't know. Now, initially, the doctors believed that Mona suffered a brain hemorrhage as a result of the accident, until her husband admitted to bashing in her head just before being executed for murdering his previous 5 wives. This would certainly put Mona in the crisis apparition category. But why haunt Pikes Peak Highway? It's possible that the accident itself left her with significant brain damage, and her last clear and conscious memory was at that location. Motorists who have encountered the spirit describe her as being completely nude and in the area of around mile marker number 13. Those who have given her a ride usually offer her a jacket or a blanket to cover with and reported her skin to be cold and clammy to the touch. When they reach the bottom of the road, she removes the jacket or blanket and runs naked back towards the mountain before eventually vanishing. One man who offered her his jacket and a ride on his motorcycle in 1973, later found a receipt for the Glen Cove gift shop in his jacket pocket. The receipt was dated September 21st, 1932, the year Mona died. Being an employee on the mountain for more than 3 decades, the man went to the Glen Cove gift shop the following day, only to learn that his experience wasn't so unusual and that he had given a ride to Desperation Mona, as she had been dubbed. Now, the ghost that is believed to be Winona Desperation Mona Roberts usually appears at dusk, so actually encountering her may be tricky. Let's move on to the state of Florida. The town of Lourida was built on Lake Isatoga, which feeds Arbuckle Creek. Now, Isatoga is a Seminole name meaning lake where people were killed in the water. There were numerous and random deaths, and the natives viewed the area as a cursed place. Once upon a time, a man wanted to fall in love. He was so desperate, he commissioned a local herbalist, or witch, to make him a love potion. They met on the bridge that crosses Arbuckle Creek, where the witch changed the price for the potion to include his firstborn child. Now, naturally, the man refused and is believed to have thrown the witch off the bridge. As if being thrown off a bridge wasn't bad enough, the woman was impaled on a tree below the bridge. Frightened, the man retrieved her body and tried to weigh it down in the creek, but she surfaced. The townspeople wouldn't permit her to be buried in the local cemetery because she was a witch. So, she was interred on the outskirts of town. It is not known if the man was charged with her death or even what became of him. During the 1940s, Lareda fell into a vicious cycle. Nearly half of the town's population died during World War II. The town began to fail, which led to people moving away to find better opportunities, which caused the town to flounder even more, which led to more people leaving. At some point, the death of the town was blamed, of course, on the witch. Her body was exhumed and taken away from Lareda. Up until this point, people would report seeing the witch on the Arbuckle Creek Bridge and in the back seats of cars as they drove over. After the exhumation and relocation of her body, the sightings intensified. Even though the backseat sightings were only through rearview mirrors, nonetheless, the townspeople were convinced that she was the reason for their collective misfortune and burned down the shack where the witch once lived. To this day, nothing will grow where the shack once stood. Today, people still report seeing the witch on the bridge and in the back seats of their cars. One report even has her floating on the water in Arbuckle Creek. They also report seeing a man and a young boy under the bridge or at a nearby boat launch. The boy is said to play with people's fishing lines. Legend tripper and paranormal author Christopher Balzano suspects that the man under the bridge is the man from the legend, and the boy is his son. He suggests that the witch ultimately got what she wanted. There's another place in Florida. Now, most paranormal researchers know about the I-4 dead zone. It is believed to be one of the most dangerous and most haunted stretch of highway in the United States. The purported paranormal phenomenon is varied, but the lore remains fairly consistent and is simply tragic. The area, now known as Sanford, Florida, was originally known as St. Joseph's Colony, led by Father Felix Prosper Swemberg. It was either a settlement for Swedish indentured servants or a settlement of German immigrants who purchased the land. The people who initially resided in the area worked the land to cultivate orange groves and celery fields. Shortly after a fire devastated the colony, Father Felix contracted yellow fever and passed away during a trip to Tampa. This led to an epidemic that brought the colony to its knees. Four other colonists died from the fever, but without Father Felix, there was no one to perform the last rites. The four victims were buried at the edge of a field with a small wooden cross marking their resting place. The remaining colonists packed up and moved on. St. Joseph's Colony had floundered. Fast forward to 1877, when the town of Sanford was established, and in the early 1900s, a farmer named Al Hawkins purchased the land containing the four graves. Now, Mr. Hawkins and his wife felt that the proper thing to do was to let those buried on their property rest in peace. Mr. Hawkins died in 1939, and at some point during the 1950s, Miss Hawkins was persuaded by developers to sell the land for a proposed interstate highway. The contractors, architects, developers, and transportation authorities knew the graves were there, yet they chose to do nothing. It wasn't a reasonable request to relocate the highway or the graves. It would have taken time and considerable funds to do either one. One official was believed to have said, "It's not an ancient Indian burial ground. They're just a few old bones." Well, construction commenced, covering the graves on what was left of the wooden markers, and Interstate 4 was born. the tragic events of I-4 began the day Sanford section of the new highway opened in 1963, with a jackknifed semi-truck that killed the driver. Since then, what has become to be known as the dead zone of I-4 has racked up over 2,000 accidents, many of which are fatalities. According to the National Transportation Safety Board, Interstate 4 averaged 132 deaths per year between 2011 and 2015. That's one death per mile of highway. In addition to being a seemingly dangerous stretch of highway of travel, people also report seeing phantom pioneers along the roadside. A white horse pulling a hearse, and phantom voices on car radios, cell phones, CB radios, and car radios are also said to go dead when passing over the gravesite. Some locals are so superstitious about the purported hauntings in the area that they will detour several miles in order to avoid driving that particular stretch of the interstate. The gravesites are located under the eastbound lanes just before the south end of the St. John's River Bridge. It is accessible off of Highway 17/92, but the land is owned by the state and visits to the graves are not encouraged. But not encouraged doesn't mean you can't go. So for you ghost lovers down in Florida, I'd go check it out. I got one more for you before we get out of here, and I'll be covering more probably on an Elite show very soon because I got a ton of these, man. It's pretty interesting. This comes from Missouri. It's known as the Lawler Ford Road in Wildwood, Missouri. The two-mile stretch of road that is Lawler Ford has appropriately gained the nickname Zombie Road. Now, while doing research for this podcast, I can understand how the moniker came to be. Now, although it isn't a road known for zombies, the asphalt road was originally part of a Native American trail that led to the Merrimack River. Today, it is inaccessible by motor vehicles and primarily serves as a heavily wooded nature trail. Lawler Ford Road also runs along the largest Native American burial site in the U.S. This alone could explain the numerous sightings of Native American spirits that walk across parts of the road. They are reported to be in traditional dress and are oblivious to the living whose paths they are crossing. Confederate soldiers have also been spotted in the area of the road. This would lend credence to the concept of GPT, given that many Civil War locations are notorious for GPT-related hauntings. Such sightings are not surprising considering the fact that the road was of strategic importance during the Civil War, and history indicates that there were many bloody altercations that occurred along this road, and it has no doubt left its mark. Mystery lights have been reported near the site of a nearby railroad accident that took the life of a man, and phantom footsteps have been heard along the path as well. There are even reports of a woman who yells at passers-by from the porch of a house near the base of the trail. What enters her into the category of potentially paranormal is that she hasn't aged since the 1950s. If you're going to visit Lawler Ford Road in search of paranormal activity, you would want to visit it at night. During the daylight hours, the activity is sparse or non-existent. If you just want a spooky walk, then by all means, visit during the daylight hours. The heavy woods and tree canopy will still send safe shivers down your spine. I hope you enjoyed these tales of GPT, geographic psychic trauma. I think they're interesting. The phenomenon is interesting to me, why it happens, why these energies are imprinted on these areas where these sites happen. I don't really understand how it works. I don't think anybody else does either, but I like the stories. Again, I hope you enjoyed this. Let's take a break. I'm Kyle Filson. This is Expanded Perspectives. We'll be right back.
And we're back with Expanded Perspectives. Yeah.
Geographic trauma.
Yeah, psychic trauma, geographic psychic trauma. It's pretty interesting. That's, I guess, very, I never really thought about it. I just thought it was just random occurrences. You know, there's every town or every state has its stories, its folklore, its urban legend. You know, if you go out here, you'll see the woman in the white dress.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
She was, it was her lover died and she committed suicide or something. And then, you know, but you never really think about actually imprinting, something tragic happening and imprinting. But I guess it makes sense. Like when you go to a funeral home or you go to a hospital or you go to like a Civil War battlefield, like you do feel a change. Mm-hmm. I don't know what it is. And it's probably because all the despair and it does imprint itself in that area. It's so weird.
I tell you what, I don't, and I know you don't know the answer to this, but how come it's only the bad stuff? Why can't we ever have it like a party? Like, why can't you go to where they used to hold like really awesome concerts and you'd be like, man, this is awesome. Everything here feels awesome, but it doesn't work that way.
Yeah.
It's only like the dread. So I don't know what is going on. I don't want to know.
I don't either.
But that does explain where people, and we've discussed this multiple times in the past over the years, of when you get a sense of dread from just being in an area. This could easily explain that.
Yeah, and maybe that's right. Like you're in an area or you're on a walk in a, you know, in the woods or something, and you have this over foreboding feeling coming over. Maybe something tragic happened there. And it may not be a monument to let you know about it, but it may have happened. Or somebody was murdered here 500 years ago. I don't know.
Could that explain some of the cold spots that we've talked about where you feel it in those areas as well?
I don't know. But going along with that theme, check this out. We have an email here. It says, yeah. My father has always been especially sensitive to paranormal events, although he would never say he fully believes in ghosts after what he's seen. It would be impossible not to think they might really exist for me. But anyways, this is one of his ghost stories that especially scared me when I was younger. Even now, I love to listen to him tell it. So I'll do my best to tell it the way he does. When he was around 26 years old, he had a job that was about 30-minute drive from downtown where he lived in his apartment. It was a beautiful drive with winding roads through a wooded area. It went past old houses and farms. It was green, lush, and picturesque. There was also a very old cemetery, huge, that he drove past. It took a good 2 minutes, going around 50 miles an hour, to get through the whole thing. It was ancient and actually pretty interesting, but he never paid much attention to it. Normally, he would get off work around 5 p.m. and would be home between 5:30 and 6. One night, though, he stayed late because it was one of his coworkers' birthdays. So it was actually around 9 p.m. when he left the office. That's when he started his drive home. When he turned to a bend in the road, it brought him past the border of the cemetery. He said when he did that, he could see someone standing by the side of the road up ahead. Now, normally, he wasn't one to pick up strangers in the dead of night out in the middle of nowhere, but there was something different, like some voice inside of his head was compelling him to stop. So he did. As he got closer, he could make out that the person standing there was a young girl, maybe 12 or 13. He said she was beautiful, and she looked sad as he pulled over and rolled down his window. The girl was wearing a white dress. It looked old, probably from the early 1900s. Her hair was dark, not quite black, and had been pulled back, although it was falling out and a few strands fell in front of her face. Her skin was pale, her eyes dark, and overall giving her a very haunted look. He asked her if he could help her, so he opened the passenger side door and she climbed in. He started driving. He started asking her questions. What was her name? What happened to her? Did she need any help? Where did she live? All the while he was doing this, she just looked out the window and said nothing. He kept asking her questions, and as he neared the border of the cemetery, as he passed the final tombstone, he said, he looked over to find himself alone in the car. He only told his parents and me about what had happened. And sometimes later, he showed me an older magazine with the 10 most haunted spots in my state. That cemetery just happened to be number 3, with countless stories of the young vanishing hitchhiker. There was even a photo of it in the magazine, and with her birth and death date. She'd been killed tragically upon discovering that she was pregnant after being raped. I don't really know what to think about it, but I've always loved my dad's story, and I just wanted to share it with you two and the listeners. I hope you guys have a good day, Summer. So, wow, see, this is someone who's, that's, their father had this experience, and it's similar to what I was talking about. And it's probably, it must be a famous place in that state where several people have seen this little girl.
Mm-hmm.
And that's geographic psychic trauma.
There it is.
Yeah.
Interesting. It's so weird.
Now, before we got into the segment,
yeah,
you had mentioned some story you had.
Oh, yeah.
Something crazy. So I want to get into that before we get out of here.
Fort McCoy. I'm going to leave y'all with this here. You're going to enjoy this. It says, hi, I want to share an experience I had while training with my National Guard unit at Fort McCoy, Wisconsin. I was attached to a unit in my perspective, MOS, while in the program. I don't really want to give any specifics on my service, as the community is small enough to identify me to my peers. But in 2014, my platoon decided to conduct nighttime land navigation at Fort McCoy from 2030 to 0030. While the Army is typically all about buddy pairs, night land nav is one of those few cases where we can do things solo if we choose. Having done night land nav plenty before, I step off alone, compass, map, and headlamp in hand. For those who do not know, land navigation involves seeking out markers on a course by plotting their coordinates on a map and moving there via terrain reference and compass. At night, this is typically done without light as much as possible. When light is used, it's red. This minimizes damage to night vision. Ostensibly, these methods also keep you concealed in a tactical environment when employed with noise discipline. Kyle, do you have noise discipline?
No. I don't. I've lacked discipline in many fields.
Says, I bring this up so you can understand a few things about my circumstances. I was moving through the woods while making a token effort to be hard to spot and hear. The woodland I was part of, a larger forest system, but was frequently traveled. That night we had some 15-ish soldiers clomping all around. My illumination was a toggleable headlamp, but was toggled to be red when turned on. To cycle to white light, I have to turn it off twice. Yeah, it's like the Petzels, right? Like, oh, yeah. We got those.
Yeah.
It says, my assigned points will take me to the other side of the course and back. A good hour and a half of walking as the crow flies. They're more or less in a straight line, so I estimate 2.5 hours out and back. I know if I come back too early, I might be given another set of points. So I resolve to walk out, take a break for an hour, then mosey on back. The first half of this goes as planned. I get my points without much trouble and wind up sitting on a hillside at around 10 o'clock at night. It's cloudy, but the moon's full, and I can see well when the sky is clear and poorly when it is not. Occasionally, I see a red light bobbing in the distance below me. Once, a pair of platoon members pass down the hill from me using a white light to try to read their map. I startle them when I ask if they need help. At the end of my break, there's no more motion in my area. Most people had likely already walked out and back, or they were too lost and took the hand railing road home. I'm feeling pretty at one with my surroundings, having sat in the same spot eating stale Skittles for a good long while. Owls hooting and trees sway. All is well. I trot down my hill and step through some brush. I'm in a clearing where prairie intersects with forest. There's some dead trees in the area, and one of them is split about halfway up. At the top, 15 foot or so, I can make out a head and shoulders silhouetted against the clouds backlit by the moon. I walk up to ask how they got up there and if they're stuck, when the shadow twitches and I get the impression it's turned toward me. I stand there looking at it, and it's maybe looking at me. Now, the situation feels off, but I'm not going to let a little battle buddy punk me. I ask if they need a hand. Mid-sentence, the moonlight comes back. The thing on the tall stump is not a soldier.
Uh-oh.
The moonlight glimpse is the best look I get at this thing. It looks like a stretched-out, bald person. Its long arms are clutching the stump. I can't make out the face, but it looks pinched. By that I mean I couldn't see its eyes or mouth like they were small and in the middle of its head. It's skinny, like it hasn't eaten, but it's tall and obviously strong to have made such a vertical climb. It was definitely facing me. It probably was this whole time I was in the clearing. Maybe since I came down the hill. Maybe my speech startled it. I swear loudly. It rapidly scurries down the trunk. I flick on my red light and I catch it on all fours moving toward the brush line in the direction I'm heading. Automatically, I keep toggling the lamp to be in the white light. That means it goes off, then to flashing red. In the flash, I see the thing at the wood line, but I think it's flipped around and is backing in, probably to keep eyes on me. In a few seconds it takes for me to get to the white light, this thing is gone. I scan the tree line, which is silent. When it moved, there was a scraping noise, plus the woodland brush is dense. If it was still running, I would hear it. I reason that it must have stopped. It must still be watching me. I fumble out my knife and keep looking around the woods in front of me. After ages, I start inching along a perpendicular path to my initial route of travel, an angle that will link me up with the hardball road that runs down and around the side of the course. Once on the road, I can take it back to where my platoon is parked. My major problem is that the road is 10 minutes of walking away from my current position, mostly wooded. Now, that can't be helped. I have to get out of the clearing first. My progress on that front is painfully slow. I'm fighting my natural urge to freeze in place like a deer in the headlights. After sidestepping a good 10 meters, I hear a corresponding rustling and think I see movement. It's enough to get me to turn and bolt right into a downed log, which trips me. I scramble up to my feet and look back to the wood line, where there is an audible commotion. I glimpse a leg and butt moving in back into the woods, and at this point, I'm done with the whole situation, but I don't want to run again. So I start power walking to the road, turning to look as much as I can while still seeing what I need to. Over the movement of my kit, I can hear it moving alongside me parallel. As I near the end of the clearing, I think I hear it picking up the pace as if to cut me off. I make the decision to sprint. When I enter the woods, my path is clear, but I think I can hear it in my periphery. Now, I don't stop and run hard until I hit paved road. I bite it hard a few times along the way, but recover with a frantic speed that I cannot consciously replicate. Once on the road, I run perpendicular to the forest until I don't think I hear it anymore. I'm winded from my breakout run and from the middle of the road have good visibility and decide to walk to catch my breath. It's quiet for a while. Then I hear a branch move around 30 foot in the air from the woods that I had just fled. I snap my gaze up and I see a pale, ovular face, half in shadow, peeking at me from around a trunk. I take off again. After way too long, I make it back to the headlights of our LMTVs, and it's 12:15. What happened, cadet? Did you get lost out there? You're covered in mud. Did you fall down? And why are you so out of breath? I got lost on my way back, yeah, and then I rolled down Pike's Peak, and then I ran to get back in time. LOL, cadet was lost. I knew better than to claim I saw a monster. Already, my reaction had left me feeling foolish. In the years since drilling at FMC, I've never experienced anything like that again. McCoy does not have a history of disappearances, and as far as I know, neither do the two closest towns, Sparta and Toma. I've done Nightland Nav alone a few times since without issue. This is less from courage and more from me deciding I must have misinterpreted a situation. Thanks for reading. T.
Wow.
So, sounds like hanging out with a pale crawler almost got you in trouble.
Man. Yeah.
And again, this isn't the first time that we've heard about these crazy crawlers being seen or noticed in and around military bases.
That's right. Yeah, I was going to say, the last time I heard a similar story was a guy doing like nighttime operations like that.
So craziness, right there it is. Keep an eye out for the crawlers. I don't like the fact that it climbed the tree again is like watching him from the trees.
Yeah, I don't like the idea of that.
I'm out on that.
Not at all. Well, if you have any cool stories you'd like to share with me and Cam, please don't hesitate. You can email the show, expandedperspectives@yahoo.com. You can call the show, 888-393-2783. I want to remind everybody about our Expanded Perspectives Elite program. If you're listening to this show and you like it, you're only listening to half of what we do. The other show is on Patreon. Go to patreon.com/expandedperspectivesElite. Go over there and follow us. Right now, for $5 a month, you'll get access to the entire back catalog, but that will be changing in a month or so. So go over there now, listen to everything we've done. Now, not all the episodes are up. I am moving more episodes over daily, but there's already like 150 or so there. So very, very cool. Let's not forget about our sponsor, Babbel. If you want to elevate yourself in 2024, choose Babbel, the scientifically proven language learning app that delivers results. Here's a special limited time deal for our listeners right now. Get 55% off your Babbel subscription, but only for our listeners. You got to go to babbel.com/expanded. That's babbel.com/expanded to get 55% off. Cam, what do you got planned for the rest of your week?
Mowing.
Just mowing and weed eating.
Mowing and weed eating and just trying to get everything caught back up. But I don't have anything that I can think of.
You need to start a garden. You need to grow some tomatoes. You need to grow some cucumbers.
I've already got all that going. Yeah, the garden's coming. It's coming soon, like within the next week or so.
Well, that's awesome.
So, yeah, it's going to go down. I'm looking to have some homemade salsa.
There you go. Homemade salsa. Our gardens in the past have done pretty well, but never with tomatoes. For whatever reason, we can't grow tomatoes.
Man, oh, man. Well, there's work. Like, you have to really, you
maybe
know what
that's
I mean?
My
like,
problem.
Really, you got to work. Because I grew some pretty good ones. I like growing the peppers. My daughter wants, I'm going to have to grow garlic and stuff like that. So, yeah, she wants to really have one going. And I'm getting my cannery stuff all together, too, so I can start doing. Because I want to make some pickles.
Oh, yeah, there you go.
Yeah, I want to start doing some more pickling, all kinds of stuff. So, yeah, that's coming.
Well, and, you know, canning is a thing I used to help with my grandfolks, my grandparents when I was a kid. That's kind of, you know, some people are like, what are you, a prepper? But no, I mean, it just makes
sense,
right?
Well, your granddad had a badass garden.
He did.
Your grandpa's garden was ridiculous. Well, that was why it was so awesome.
Yeah, he had the bees and stuff, everything. It was worked really good. And, you know, but it was his era. He grew up, you know, from the Great Depression on, like they saved everything. So I just think it was crazy. But now as I'm older, I'm like, man, stuff could go crazy. And if you had a whole bunch of stuff canned, boy, you'd be in good shape. Your freezer's filled with venison.
Yep.
Filled with, you know, different turkey and things like that.
You can
rabbit.
Even can your venison. You and can do you all of that. Yeah, I'm telling you, man.
Pickles, peaches, all kinds of stuff like that. Now you got
canned
me interested.
Peaches. It sounds good, doesn't it? Peaches. You want to start canning too? It's on.
I'm gonna start a YouTube marathon tonight.
Here we go. Right? Here we
all
go.
All right. Well, I hope everybody has a good one out there. Till next time, folks. I'm Kyle. He's Cam.
Peace, y'all.